Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How you doing? Did you have a good day? Yeah, so did I. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you're going to stick around, hang out with us a little bit tonight. We have some very odd clips for you tonight, from Montel Williams to Bill Clinton that, I don't know, let's come up with some kind of a phrase here about these clips. I've got one. We'll report, you decide. Would that work? All right. There is a debate going on right now in California, carried by CNN, between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. I've been watching some of it tonight. I think they ought to just go ahead and declare one of them to be the presidential candidate, the other one to be the vice presidential candidate. It's like a, what we used to call them? Oh, my God, Barack just reached out and touched her. What we used to call them, love-ins, back in the 60s? Anyway, it's entertaining television if you want to watch it. I understand. If you want to stick around and have some fireworks, stay here. Speaking of Hillary Clinton, guess what her husband has been up to? Was this from today, Kathy? This Bill Clinton clip? He was in Denver, at the University of Denver. That's where your father's a professor. Or was a professor. I'll be damned. How about that? Kathy's father was a professor of art at the University of Denver for years and years and years and years. And now he's retired. Former President Bill Clinton stumping for Hillary at the University of Denver. You want to hear Bill Clinton have a nervous breakdown of some fashion? Now, remember, in the past few days, he's been taken out behind the woodshed and had his ass whipped by people in Hillary's campaign who have said to him, sit down and shut up, big dog. You're not the big dog anymore. You got to shut your mouth. You're really screwing things up for Mrs. Clinton. So you can hear the kind of pent-up anger in the big dog's voice here, if you want to hear this. What happened was Clinton was given a speech for Hillary, and someone in the crowd shouted out about 9/11 being an inside job. Clinton calls this guy an idiot, tells him to go away. That's a good way to build a broad coalition. Is he trying to out-angry insane McCain? Listen to this.
What are you screaming about? Are you one of those that was an inside job, guys? Well, let me tell you something. The great thing, first, Hillary agrees we should end the war. But we've heard from you now. Now you hear from me. I let you be rude and interrupt me. Scream at the top of your lungs. Was not an inside job. It was an Osama bin Laden job with 19 people from Saudi Arabia. They murdered 3,000 Americans and other farmers, including over 200 other Muslims. And we look like idiots, folks, denying that the people who murdered our fellow citizens did it when they are continuing to murder people all around the world. So we heard from you. You go away.
Whoa. We heard from you. You go away. Ow! We look like idiots denying that the people who murdered our fellow citizens did it. I think it's pretty clear that even though Clinton was taken behind the woodshed and had his ass whacked a few times by Hillary's campaign people, I think it's very clear that if there is a Clinton administration, the horrific events that occurred in this country on September 11, 2001, will become a part of history, signed, sealed, packaged, and delivered exactly as presented, even though the 9/11 Commission deliberately and conscientiously did not pursue avenues of investigation. By agreement, they decided not to check out certain, not just engineering aspects, but also financial aspects. The fact that the president's daily briefing just prior to the attacks had bin Laden determined to strike inside the United States. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I've said before on this program many times, I don't know what the real story is. I don't know what the truth is. I do know this, that the stories put out by the Bush administration cannot be true for one simple salient fact. Every single thing that the Bush administration has said, up to and including taking us into two wars, has been a lie. Even when the lies are demonstrably proven, even when the documents are presented, when testimony is given, when the entire world sees the evidence that what Bush says is a lie, Bush continues to maintain the lie. Now, using, whatever device you want to use, Occam's razor, something out of logic, reason, if everything Bush says is a lie, does it stand to reason that where it concerns 9/11, he tells the truth? 9/11 was the keystone to everything else that this rat bastard has done. Therefore, an awful lot of investigation should go into 9/11, the events that occurred on that day and prior to that. Don't you think? But for the big dog to stand there and say, "We heard from you, you go away, we look like idiots denying that the people who murdered our fellow citizens did it." 19 people from Saudi Arabia. No, Bill, it was 15 from Saudi Arabia. The other four were from other Arabic-speaking countries. You know, I've been through this. I really have with the Kennedy assassination, and I know a lot of people are absolutely, utterly convinced. Look, it was Lee Harvey Oswald. Malloy, take a break. Forget about it. And I will not believe that. If I'm conscious, if I have a conscious death, I will not believe it as I'm sucking in my last lungful of air. The Kennedy story. And as far as 9/11, the further we get from it, and the more big names like Bill Clinton and George Bush and all the commentators and everybody, the more they try to denigrate the people who have legitimate questions. These are legitimate questions. The questions that have been asked. Don't ask me about all the questions. Christ, there are the hundreds of questions being asked about what occurred on 9/11. That was the most profoundly disturbing day in this nation's recent history. I can't think of going back to the Civil War. So to be told to sit down and shut up, that is the prevailing attitude, and the commands from or the command from the people who think they are in charge and who are in fact in charge. Okay, there's not a whole lot we can do, but when I allow somebody to get inside my mind and tell me what I may and may not believe, or I'm an idiot for believing something, unless it's religious claptrap, then I guess I would deserve the label of idiot. But I didn't like to hear that. I just didn't like that. That was just a little bit too over the top from Bill Clinton. And like I say, it's pent up. Bill Clinton has one hell of a temper. Anyone who knows him, and I don't know him. Matter of fact, I've never met him. Have we met him? We've never met him. We've met Hillary a couple of times, but I've never met him. But I know people who know him. And the consensus from the people who know him, who have been around, I don't mean who have met him, "Hi, Mr. President." I mean, who know him? The consensus is that he's extremely volatile temper, and can go off like a rocket. And I think that's what happened. He, like I said, he was slapped by the people running Hillary's campaign and told to sit down and shut up. He was doing damage. And this is his response. One of his responses. Whatever. No, I don't want to talk about 9/11 tonight. I really don't, because you know why. Anyway, stick around. I have more here that is just very, very intriguing. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. To take it from him anymore. You don't have to take it from him. You don't have to
border to border and coast to coast. The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
I would not run from the Holocaust. I would not run from the bomb.
21 past the hour. Bob sent this in. Remember the dust-up when several weeks ago Hillary Clinton made a statement about the roles that Lyndon Johnson and Martin Luther King played, their respective roles in getting civil rights legislation passed. The statement Hillary Clinton made was this one. I would point to the fact that Dr. King's dream began to be realized when President Lyndon Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, when he was able to get through Congress something that President Kennedy was hopeful to do. The president before had not even tried, but it took a president to get it done. That dream became a reality. The power of that dream became real in people's lives because we had a president who said, quote, we're going to do it, end quote, and actually got it accomplished. Now, that's what Hillary said, and you'll remember there was an immediate dust-up, I guess is the right term, about whether or not that statement denigrated the efforts of MLK or denied the efforts or elevated the what LBJ did. And the point, the subtext of everything was, if you want to look at it this way, was it took a president, a white president, to help a Negro get civil rights laws passed. And that's what it was all about. Now, what's gotten less attention is what Martin Luther King himself thought on this subject. Chris Rabb has the bad taste to point out that King wrote this, what I'm going to read to you, in an article published after his death in January 1969. Obviously, King wrote it prior to January 69, but that's when it was published. Now, this is Martin Luther King writing. The past record of the federal government, however, has not been encouraging. No president has really done very much for the American Negro, though the past two presidents have received much undeserved credit for helping us. This credit has accrued to Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy only because it was during their administrations that Negroes began doing more for themselves. Kennedy didn't voluntarily submit a civil rights bill, nor did Lyndon Johnson. In fact, both told us at one time that such legislation was impossible. President Johnson did respond realistically to the signs of the times and used his skills as a legislator to get bills through Congress that other men might not have gotten through. I must point out, in all honesty, however, that President Johnson has not been nearly so diligent in implementing the bills he has helped shepherd through Congress. End quote. And as the writer of this piece, Bob sent it to me, the writer says, it would be fun to live in the kind of world where people remembered enough history to ask Hillary Clinton about this. So, if you want to literalize, if that's the word, what occurred when Clinton made her statement, and compare it to what Martin Luther King said, then all of a sudden, even though Barack Obama did not make a big issue about it, as I remember, some other people did, some of the surrogates maybe, truth is, it looks like Hillary Clinton was wrong in what she said. It wasn't LBJ. It wasn't Kennedy. It was, in fact, the efforts of Martin Luther King and the people around him who took the German Shepherd attacks and the fire hoses and the beatings and the hangings and the lynchings. And LBJ, I don't know, you pays your money and you takes your choice, right? Interesting. We got a break here? No, we got about a minute. Let's talk with Sanchez, who's called in from Montbello, California. Hey, Sanchez.
Hey, Mike, how are you? Sorry, I was listening on the delay right now. I didn't.
That's okay.
I'm outraged. I cannot believe this. I heard this morning.
Bill Clinton?
Yes.
Yeah.
I heard it first, and I'm going to talk about that in a second, but I heard it first this morning on the Bill Press show. It's unbelievable with all of the question marks, with all of the evidence, that unanswered cylindrical object that hit the Pentagon, the question of the towers falling, disintegrating. Oh, my God, the discoveries of the Jersey Girls. I mean, I could go on and on. We know what we're talking about here. And how could this man get up on stage and say something like that? To believe we had a bloody good reason to invade Iraq, 70% of the sheeple were led by the nostrils to believe this stuff. How can he buy into this? How can he say something like that? That's incredible to me, man.
Yeah.
But then, this morning, they played it back on Bill Press. Mm-hmm. I know I shouldn't slam the guy, but I mean, he completely backed it up. His replies were, he said, "I've had enough of these idiots." He won't take any calls from any 9/11 theorists.
Hey, hold on.
Go for a minute.
Sanchez, let me put you on hold. We'll take a break and we'll come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us.
Liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Sanchez in Montbello, California. Okay, where were we? We're talking about the...
We were talking about Clinton and denying the events that which occurred in 9/11. We were also touching on Bill Press right now because he refuses. In essence, he's backing all this up. You know, it starts at the top. That's the top of the food chain, and it works its way down with the byproducts of the Iraq War, all of the deaths as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if 70% of the sheeple were led by the nostrils to believe that we had a bloody good reason to invite Iraq, these are the same people that are being led to believe by Bill Clinton saying that, and the reaction of the crowd afterwards, the same thing is happening. And again, this morning, this is the thing that really outraged me, was what Press said about it. He said, "I've had enough of these idiots." He won't take calls from any of these 9/11 theorists, and he said it's not even worth talking about. Yeah, I think you know me by now. You know that I'm a progressive independent. I'm not a Democrat. And this is the issue that I have with this right now, is the Democrats are doing the same job in reforming and rethinking our memories on all of these events, Mike.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a chance to talk to Sophia?
To who?
To Sophia, the woman who helped make that documentary called 9/11 Mysteries?
No, I have not. There are very few people that I have spoken with who have put out the videos or done the research.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not in that advocacy camp about the advocacy that the events as they occurred on 9/11 are not as they have been presented to the American public. That is what I believe, that it was all lies, it was all deception.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people on radio who are pushing that issue, a lot of people on the Internet who are pushing the issue and presenting what appears to be pretty solid information or proof, if one wants to call it proof, that the events that occurred that day were entirely different from what we've been told.
Correct.
My role has been pretty much, and I hate to say this because it sounds like a cop-out, but my role has been, as an observer, to try to look at as much as I can, to read as much as I can about these events, to hear. I've got friends who tell me I'm just out of my mind, that what occurred on September 11th is what occurred on September 11th, that if I want to try to, insist on seeing a picture commercial jetliner slamming into the Pentagon, then there's something wrong with me. Even though, you know, I turn around and say, well, isn't it true that there are 30 or 40 cameras constantly focusing on every nook and cranny of the Pentagon, and yet nobody has produced one photo of a plane? I've gotten emails from people that I know who say, not from people I know, but people who have said, Mike, I don't live too far from the Pentagon. I saw the plane.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what to believe. I do know this. Bush and everyone associated with his administration is a liar.
Correct.
And everything that they have done, every signing statement he has made a lie out of every act he has signed.
Mm-hmm.
Every single a political appointee he stuck into a regulatory agency has turned that regulatory agency into a lie. He lied us into a war. He's lied 3,000 American service men and women into their graves.
Right.
He has lied 1 million Iraqis into their graves. He
is
a lying son of a bitch. So why should I believe the one event that was the triggering event for all the rest of this cascade of death? Why should I believe that, knowing that everything else he said has been a lie? I can't do it. I simply can't do it. So that's where I stand. If Bill Press or Abe Snake or I don't care who it is wants to say, look, Bill Clinton's right, you're out of your mind, that's, you know, they certainly have a right to that point of view. I can't go there.
This is like a bad pyramid scheme, okay?
Oh, sure,
and that's
sure.
That's at the very top of it, Mike. But, okay, that is the reason
why... All right,
wrap
this up for me, Sanchez.
Okay, well, that's the reason why it puts the nail in the coffin for me voting for Hillary Clinton, because if Bill Clinton's going to shut it down, well, she's out of the picture for me voting for her. That's it, man.
I hear you. Thanks, Sanchez.
Thanks,
man. I appreciate you checking in. And that kind of I got a letter from our North Metro Atlanta military correspondent, Sharon, who says, regarding that clip of Bill... She says, just out of curiosity, why are they asking Bill Clinton about 9/11? This is at least the second time someone has asked Bill about 9/11. Shouldn't they be asking members of the Bush administration? On the other hand, I don't know why he has to be so rude to the questioner. I don't like Bill when he's angry. It ain't pretty. I'm with you, though. I don't know exactly what happened on 9/11, but I know it's not what they said in the official story. I can narrow it down to one question, Sharon writes. Why didn't NORAD follow procedures on that day? Well, to answer, I don't know if your question, Sharon, is rhetorical. Why are they asking Bill Clinton? And I think the answer to that is because a lot of people are convinced that the fix is in and Hillary, no matter what, is going to be president of the United States. And that Bill Clinton, no matter what, is going to be the first husband. And that Clinton, no matter what, will have his wife's ear. And I think they're asking Bill because they want to know if there are any plans, excuse me, to open a real investigation of the events of 9/11, or if the the commission report, 9/11 commission report, is going to be filed away as that's it, that's as far as we go. There's no there, move on. So I think it's legit. If Bill Clinton is out there touting his wife as the next president, I think the question is legit, you know, about 9/11. All right, now do we have time for the Montel Williams thing? I think we do. All right. Let me give you the story here. It was on Wednesday, January 30th, which would have been what, last Wednesday? Is that right? No, yesterday. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I see. Never mind. This is on Saturday. That's right. On Saturday morning just passed, for about 3 minutes, Montel Williams, the TV talk show host, was on Fox and Friends, that filthy show that's on Saturday mornings. I think it's on every morning on Fox Network. Keep in mind here that Montel is a former Marine, and he's a former naval officer, Montel Williams. And he sat there and lectured these humanoids on Fox and Friends on the stupidity of spending so much airtime on the death of Heath Ledger rather than covering, for example, the war in Iraq and the American soldiers who were dying there. Brandon Friedman, who wrote this, said it was a spectacle rarely seen on live cable television as Montel exposed and condemned tabloid news shows and much of American culture for what they have become, shallow and greedy. Now, I want you to hear this. 3 minutes into this segment on Fox, one of the hosts cut off Montel in order to go to commercial. When they came back, Montel was not there. And then 4 days later, which would have been this past Tuesday, day before yesterday, after 17 years as a television host, Montel Williams is out of a job. Variety magazine is reporting yesterday that Montel's show was canceled when Fox-owned stations opted not to renew it for the 2008-2009 season after this event that occurred on Fox and Friends. Now, I don't know about the timeline, but we want you to hear this. It runs 3 minutes. Listen to it. Starts out with one of the Fox stooges trying to interview Montel Williams about Heath Ledger.
And was the pressure of stardom too much for the young actor, someone who knows how it can be under the glare of the celebrity microscope? Is Montel Williams, who joins us in the studio this morning. Montel, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's good to have you here. Boy, we talk about a tragic situation, Heath Ledger. Weigh in on that for us.
You know, for me, I got to tell you, my heart goes out to his family, but I have been repulsed, honestly, by all the coverage. Yeah. Here's a question I have. What's this? How many people have died in Iraq since January 1?
Good question. It's about 20.
No, it's not about. It is 28.
Okay, excuse me, Montel.
But I say it that way. I say it that way because we're going to spend 15 minutes talking about this. I've not seen one death, one name of a soldier, one name of a person who allows us to do this. And you were in the military.
Mm-hmm.
We're the ones who defend this democracy. Those guys are over there dying. And we're going to sit here and speculate about a young man who passed away, who's somebody's child, mm-hmm. who's somebody's father, has not even been buried yet. And I think it's gone way
too far. But why do we do that as a society? I mean,
because
look,
it's our voracious appetite to bring in ratings. That's what it is. We know it. We know it as a fact. Let's be honest about it.
Of course it's ratings, so but it's the appetite. We're feeding the beast. The audience is tuning in.
Well, cart before the horse, horse before the cart. I don't know who drives it. I think if right now, if we woke up this morning and instead of talked about Heath Ledger, we talked about the troop who died last night by the IED.
Montel, we have numbers. I mean, look, it's kind of a sad reality, though. I mean, troops have been dying in Iraq since March of 2003, correct?
What are we talking about?
Right. Well, I mean, we talk about the war plenty. I was actually in bed. I was there for the invasion.
I got you.
I mean, I think everybody in this country knows we're at war.
Nobody in this country knows who died yesterday. And if I know about Heath, I want to know about the troop.
Well, don't you know?
That's
it. Talk about Heath because he was an icon. He was someone that really stood out.
He's an actor, and my heart goes out to him. I didn't know him.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people. Yesterday, probably in this country, I don't know, another 400 people passed away. I don't know any of them.
I know, but is there any realistic way to talk about 400 people who died individually?
No, I mean, but I could talk about one of the troops yesterday. And I'm sorry, if we're going to sit here and have this discussion about Heath Ledger, I want to know that I'm going to tell America 28 troops died since January 1st. That's what I want to talk about for me. Now, I mean, you guys can do it if you want. It's cool. I'm not going to knock you. Talk about it. That's part of what you do, and that's part of what we need for ratings. I don't need them.
Tell us about one of the troops who died since January 1st.
Yesterday, the only story I heard about was 2 days ago while I was taping was the IED that went off beside a truck that was going through. Troops got out, supposedly took a look, talked to one of the Iraqi soldiers that was nearby, and blew up. I don't know the name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the name.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm as disgusted with myself this morning. I got up and searched. Yesterday I searched. I wanted to know the number every day. I didn't find the name this morning. I looked up on Casualties of War. They didn't give me the name today.
And the very end of that, another Fox stooge says, we're talking to Montel Williams about a situation going on right now. Heath Ledger. We'll have more with Montel in just a moment. And when they came back, he wasn't there. He wasn't there. Now, the guy who sent me this video, sent it to a lot of people, not just me, Brandon Friedman, writes, I have no idea whether Montel already knew that his show wasn't going to be renewed and thus felt emboldened to cut loose on the air, or whether his firing was a result of his actions on Saturday. Either way, Montel Williams exhibited courage this week that few in the television industry ever will. And for that, American troops around the world stand with him. We support him not only because he stood up for the troops, but because he did it on Fox News, a network that has done more damage to the U.S. military since 9/11 than any other. Montel Williams is an American patriot. Though he left the military years ago, he has never forgotten his troops. And for that, we salute and thank you, Montel. Best of luck with whatever you choose to do next. So 4 days after you heard that, after that clip, Brandon Friedman obviously is somebody in the military. 4 days after that clip, after 17 years as a television host, Montel Williams, whose program was distributed by CBS Television, was canceled because of, all of a sudden, a rash of Fox stations that said, we don't want him anymore.
Everything I know about my country, I learned on TV.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 8 before the hour. By the way, Brandon Friedman, the one who sent out the video, I was one of the recipients, on Montel, on Fox and Friends, and also included the commentary. Brandon Friedman is one of the co-founders of VoteVet.org. That organization is the online home of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. And Brandon Friedman is the vice chairman of VoteVets.org, and he's also the author of the book entitled "The War I Always Wanted." So, the person who is sending out this information on Montel is a veteran, someone who was there and knows. Very quickly here, Reg sends us in about why gatekeepers mouth off. This is regarding Clinton. Gatekeepers, you know, the keepers of the truth. Clinton, in his quick-tempered defense reaction, probably shot from the hip because he was totally surprised and unprepared to deal with any question about 9/11, as legitimately asked of him by the questioner. But the experience we at TVNewsLies.org have had with those who have become the gatekeepers is a bit different than what seems to be the prevailing conclusion. We have found that even in the most erudite circles, including people who are very aware of much that has taken place in this administration, most Americans are totally unaware of the 9/11 truth movement or the evidence that has been unearthed disproving the 9/11 Commission report and the official version of what happened. This is not being said, Reg writes, this is not being said in defense of Clinton or Bill Press or any other, but the result of our extensive contact with tens of thousands of people who constantly challenge any questions as ridiculous and the work of conspiracy theories. An editorial written by Jesse, the editor of TVNewsLies.org, explains the reasons behind this conclusion on our part. In essence, he says that, quote, we firmly believe that those people who fully believe the conclusions of the Keene Commission have never seen or heard any of the compelling evidence to the contrary. These people never permit the complete picture to be painted for them. They never allow themselves a chance to look at any of the information about 9/11 that has been revealed. They simply do not want to know that it exists, end quote. And then Reg says, please ask anyone to come to TVNewsLies.org and do a search on Almost Perfect. It is our well-researched analysis of this problem. So, check it out. TVNewsLies.org, TVNewsLies.org, and then use their search engine for Almost Perfect. Kind of off topic, but our good friend Nancy Skinner, who is running in Michigan's 9th, has over at democracyforamerica.com, she won that poll that I asked you to vote in. She came in first. That was the first round. Now, there are three people in the second round, Skinner and two other Democrats who are running for office, one I think from North Carolina, and I'm not sure where the other one's from. So now what you have to do is go back and vote in the final round. Okay, just go to democracyforamerica.com. Democracyforamerica.com. Both the other winners are from North Carolina. And Nancy needs your vote. If she wins round two, then democracyforamerica.com, that collects contributions for progressive candidates, will send her campaign funds with, you know, no strings attached that I'm aware of. They kick in money for progressive candidates on the Democratic side. And but they let the people decide. So if you're aware of what's going on and can vote for the person that you think, by reading their websites, by looking at their positions, the person that you think would do a good job there, then in Washington, then Democrats, Democracy for America will help out. So would you do round two now? And then that's it. Go to democracyforamerica.com. And vote for Skinner, Nancy Skinner. All right? That's all you have to do. Do that for me, okay? I'll stop begging. Stay with us. More fun and frivolity when we come back. Oh, yeah. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the NOVAM Radio Network. Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. The story of Montel Williams is really shocking now. You know, is this a case of the rooster crowing at dawn and thinking that he has made the sun come up? You know, my reporting that with the linkage between his comments on Fox News channel and then 4 days later he is canceled after 17 years. The reason being that numerous Fox affiliates refused to carry the program anymore. The program was distributed by CBS television. So, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. But it certainly, I have been there. I have mysteriously lost jobs in the past in radio. After doing such terrible things as winning broadcast awards, and then all of a sudden, I find myself not employed anymore. So who knows? Just a quick email here from Michael regarding the Clinton comment. He writes, Mike, do you remember the tragic crash of the Challenger shuttle? There's a lot of wreckage, and they even discovered remains of the shuttle crew. Do you remember the tragic plane crash of Pan Am 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland? That plane exploded at 40,000 feet in the air, then fell 40,000 feet and crashed and left a debris field almost three-quarters of a mile long. There were large pieces of the plane, several airline seats, and passenger luggage, clothes everywhere, and sadly, dead passengers. Now, fast forward to United Flight 98. That supposedly crashed in that Pennsylvania field. Not one piece of the damaged airplane, no luggage, no seats, no foam seat cushions, no clothes of any kind, no cell phones, no cameras, and no passenger body remains. Hey, Bill Clinton, do I look stupid? What else we got here? Oh, this is from James in Seattle. Mike, the point has finally been reached. This week, the U.S. Congress votes on whether to legitimize America as a fascist state. Somewhere Mussolini is laughing uproariously. Yes, they call it the Telecom Immunity Bill. While the legislation, at least on two versions, one of which a Rockefeller submitted, states that immunity will be for any and all corporations forever and ever, amen, which effectively nullifies the U.S. Constitution and legally establishes this country as a corporate fascist state, which we all realize it has become anyway. The fact, James writes, that such legislation is even before a Congress in the first place says that all is now lost. Of course, there are many obvious reasons for it, but all talk of upcoming presidential elections by self-aware U.S. citizens will now cease, as such is truly pointless. The corporate court, formerly known as U.S. Supreme Court, has already ruled that Americans have no right to oversight over their privatized elections. The proprietary software of the single corporation, SAIC, which oversees the development of almost all voting machine software, shall remain closed to the electorate. There is no recourse to any but the most controlled elections from now forward. So, the corporation, which has the most control of all future national and state as well elections, is also the same corporation which oversees the bulk of domestic surveillance. Obviously, blanket corporate immunity is a necessary requisite. We are now long into the time for all decent Americans to be locked, cocked, and ready to rock. Take care. James in Seattle. Yeah, the big debate on... I shouldn't say big debate. Nobody debates this stuff anymore. Dick Cheney was on the Pigman's program today. Talking about the bill James is talking about, the immunity bill for these telecoms. And Cheney went on and on about, where is it? Oh, yeah. He says, you know, we haven't violated anyone's civil liberties. We haven't done anything. The telecom companies were very effective in preventing more deaths in America, more terrorist attacks, by allowing us to, Cheney said, people who want to leave open the possibility that the trial lawyers can go after a big company that may have helped, those companies helped specifically at our request, and they've done yeoman duty for the country, and this is the so-called terrorist surveillance program, one of the things it was called earlier. It's just absolutely essential to know who in the United States is talking to Al-Qaeda. It's a program that's been very well managed. We haven't violated anybody's civil liberties. It's, in fact, a good piece of legislation. So, at Think Progress, they say, in Cheney's mind, then breaking the law and engaging in illegal conduct apparently aren't violations of civil liberties. If telecom should not be let off the hook because Dick Cheney says they did yeoman duty for the country, they chose to break the law and profited from doing it. Now, at least one company refused to comply with the Bush administration's request because it knew the actions were illegal. Which one was that? That wasn't Verizon. Which one was it? I forget which one it was. As Glenn Greenwald explained, the proper course is to permit these companies to present to a court whatever evidence they relied on to justify their activities and let a judge decide. Greenwald writes, if telecoms... If telecoms were really these poor, helpless victims unable to defend themselves when the Bush crime family came calling, I think he means, the solution isn't to bar anyone from suing them, even when they break the law. The solution, if there were really the concern, is simply to add a provision to FISA enabling them to submit that evidence in secret, the way classified evidence is submitted to federal courts all the time. But Cheney's big defense here just raises the question, if no civil liberties were violated, which is code for no laws were broken, then why do they need the immunity? Hello? But see, Cheney knows what you know and what I know, that most Americans are dumber than a sack full of dead mushrooms. Most people, 99% of the American public doesn't even know this debate is going on. They have no freaking idea. And the ignorance is perpetuated and perpetrated by media, just like Montel Williams is trying to talk to Fox and Friends, you know, talk about the tragic death of Heath Ledger. It is a tragic death. Any death is a tragic death, isn't it? Especially for someone who's as young as this young man was. But in the meantime, how many people understand that a law is in the machinery to be, or a bill is in the machinery to be signed into law that will grant just about every corporation in America eventually total immunity? Now, the Supreme Court recently ruled that the people who got screwed in Enron can't sue. In so many cases, class action lawsuits are being declared, if not unconstitutional, well, I guess if the Supreme Court rules that they can't be filed, then it would be unconstitutional. That's all the Supreme Court rules on are constitutional issues. It's getting down to the point where if you're diabetic and you take your insulin shots and the insulin is produced by a company that the Food and Drug Administration no longer has authority over because they don't have any inspectors anymore, and that's a deliberate action. If that company is domestic, if it's Chinese, figure you're going to die eventually from a shot of Chinese insulin anyway. But if it's an American company, and you get sick from doing your insulin, and 1,000 other people get sick from the same insulin from the same company, the time is coming where, I think it's already here, there's no such thing as all 1,001 of you getting together and filing a class action lawsuit. So the burden, which reduces the cost, obviously. The cost per injured party. So the goal here is to end class action lawsuits. This is what the corporate fascist state absolutely insists upon. No. We can screw you, we can injure you, we can kill your children, as many of you as we care to. If you want to sue us, sue us. Hope you got a lot of money.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Our good friend John Names just sent me an email. It was Flight 93 over PA, not 98. I misread Michael's email. I saw 98 when it really was the 93. Thanks, John. And it was Quest. A couple of you have emailed me. It was Quest, the phone company that refused, or the telecom company that refused to go along with Bush's insistence that they break the law. The other phone companies said, oh, sure, anything you say, boss. And then the president of Quest, Skip writes, was prosecuted for some kind of odd insider trading based on the fact that he had promoted the business based on the contracts he was expecting, not realizing it was for illegal tasks. Again, the politicization of our Justice Department. Yeah, it was Quest. Is Quest still around, Kathy? I don't even know. One more here that I think is important. Steve sent this in. This is from today, from McClatchy Newspapers. The Bush administration has decided that it will continue to tolerate Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf's crackdown on his country's judiciary, at least until after the national elections on February 18th. Son of a bitch. It was the federal judiciary, or I should say Pakistan's judiciary, that was ruling that Musharraf couldn't run for another term, that the Constitution... another goddamn piece of paper, kind of like ours, according to Bush, that's a quote from him, So Musharraf apparently, not apparently, obviously sees his country's constitution exactly the same way. The Pakistan Supreme Court, several months ago, that's what all the lawyers were in the streets, in their dark suits and ties and white shirts, and in the cities in Pakistan demonstrating and being beaten and shot by this fascist military that we support in Pakistan. It was because the Supreme Court of that country said, look, Musharraf can't run again. Well, Musharraf is going to run again. So what does the Bush administration say? Okay, it's all right. Your crackdown, pervy, on your military, on your judiciary, we're not going to say anything until after the election. But that's what the crackdown was about. Jesus. McClatchy newspaper says, calling Musharraf an indispensable ally, U.S. officials have largely declined to criticize his ouster of top judges and said that questions about restoring the court's independence should be put on hold until after the election. Son of a bitch. It just never stops, does it? Just never stops. Assistant Secretary of State Richard Boucher here in the U.S., he's our point man in Pakistan, said, quote, they need to have an independent judiciary, but I can't see them doing it until after the election with all the players, including the new players, end quote. Asked if he considered Musharraf indispensable, the U.S. Boucher replied, oh, I do. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Several U.S. lawmakers told Mr. Boucher this week that the rule of law is crucial to credible elections. Christopher Shays, Republican of Connecticut, said, quote, I can't get beyond the fact that Musharraf basically dissolved the judiciary and put them aside. And it seems that almost everything that follows from that point becomes a farce. End quote. Oh, my God, a Republican says that? Whoa. But no, we're going to continue to support Musharraf. He may be a rotten, miserable, fascist, right-wing military dictator, but he's our right-wing, fascist, military dictator until such time, pervy, as we decide to murder you. Once we decide to murder you, you will be murdered. Do you understand, pervy? You're dancing with the great Satan. You're very valuable to us now. When the time comes, and I don't care who is president of the United States. When the time comes for your murder, it will occur. And that time will come, Mr. Musharraf, General Musharraf. Oh, wait, he took off his uniform. Mr. Musharraf, the time of your murder is predetermined by people within the United States government. And that time will come when you are no longer an asset to our CIA, DIA, ABC, DEFG. When the time comes, pervy, it'll be quick. You won't know it, providing the car bomb effectively kills you. We may have to go after you twice, like we did with Mrs. Bhutto. But when the time comes, Pervez... Oh, we're saying all the right stuff now. Oh, yeah, you want us to suspend your Supreme Court? Go ahead. Maybe when the election's over, you can put it back together. Dance, monkey, dance. When the time comes, pervy, all your epaulets, all your medals, all your braid and your hats and your British swagger sticks will mean nothing. They will be shredded like your skin, your liver, your kidneys, your bones, your head, when the bomb goes off, pervy.
coexist peacefully, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Lord, there goes Johnny Appleseed.
25 before the hour, BJ writes, Mike, here's another ruling, tragic ruling waiting in the wings. The federal court is now deciding if plaintiffs can sue the Medtronic company, which is now on their third recall of pacemakers. This time it's a defective lead wire that is implanted directly into the heart. Some people are facing their third life-or-death open-heart surgery to have the sucker replaced. Evidence shows that they knew of the defective wire, the company did, but went right ahead and sold them anyway. Oh, God! Does it ever stop? This is obviously, that's one of the reasons John Edwards had to be removed. And here it is. This is from July last summer. The ex-CEO of Quest is in prison. A federal judge ordered Joe Nocio, the former head of Quest Communications, to forfeit $52 million in assets during a sentencing hearing in Denver federal court. The judge also told the defense that Mr. Nocio will be serving time in prison, reports CBS station KCNC in Denver. Nocio returned to the courthouse to be sentenced for illegally selling $52 million in stock while the telecommunications company Quest became mired in a multi-billion dollar accounting scandal. Nocio didn't say anything as he entered the courtroom looking very somber. U.S. District Judge Edward Nottingham took the bench and began the proceedings, quickly issuing sentencing orders. Well, there you go. I don't know if Mr. Nocio is guilty. Probably every corporate chief in America is guilty of this kind of theft, but they don't get prosecuted as long as they play ball. They don't go to prison as long as they do what Cheney and the corporate rulers tell them to do. If you don't play, you pay. And Beth sent me this. This is from April 2006. Do any of you know who Dr. Robert M. Bowman is? Lieutenant Colonel. He's a physician and also Lieutenant Colonel, United States Air Force, retired. He flew 101 combat missions in Vietnam. He is the recipient of the Eisenhower Medal, the George F. Kennan Peace Prize, the President's Medal of Veterans for Peace, the Society of Military Engineers Gold Medal. Twice he's gotten that. Six air medals and dozens of other awards and honors. Well, he's not a physician. His PhD is in aeronautics and nuclear engineering from Caltech. He has chaired 8 major international conferences and is one of the country's foremost experts on national security. Bowman worked secretly for the U.S. government on the Star Wars project and was the first to coin that term in a 1977 secret memo. After Bowman realized that the program was only ever intended to be used as an aggressive and not a defensive tool, as part of a plan to initiate a nuclear war with the Soviets, he left the program and campaigned against it. In a radio interview, Bowman stated regarding the 9/11 attack on this country, that at the bare minimum, if Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda were involved in 9/11, then our government stood down and allowed the attacks to happen. He said it is plausible that the entire chain of military command was unaware of what was taking place and were used as tools by the people pulling the strings behind the attack. Now, this is the guy who was the head of the Star Wars missile program under Presidents Ford and Carter, and he went public to say that the official version of 9/11 is a conspiracy theory. The official version is a conspiracy theory, and his main suspect for the architect of the attack is Vice President Dick Cheney. Yeah, Bowman, you know, just another tinfoil hat wearing. I wonder if Clinton would tell him to sit down and shut up. Huh? What do you think? 101 combat missions in Vietnam, recipient of the Eisenhower Medal, George F. Kennan Peace Prize, President's Medal of Veterans for Peace, Society of Military Engineers Gold Medal twice, six air medals, PhD in aeronautics and nuclear engineering from Caltech, one of the country's foremost experts on national security. I wonder if Bill Clinton would say to him, sit down and shut up. Are you one of them 9/11 conspiracy people? Huh? See, it's stuff like that. Now, is Dr. Robert Bowman, has he gone insane? Is that it? Is he nuts when he said this 2 years ago? Year and a half ago? Whatever, almost 2 years ago? Was he totally crazy? Oh, my God. Mike, I'm a bit surprised at your rather benign expressions about John Edwards' campaign. I would have expected a little more blood on the floor coming from your reprise of his campaign. First, let me say that I'm quite a bit older than you, and thus suffering is not an abstraction to me. I do not look at the poor and benighted as someone else. My father did not work in a mill, but he did commit suicide when I was 12 in the middle of the Great Depression. I went to school, yes, but I lived in an orphan home when I did. I came out of that environment and went into the Army Air Corps in 1942 and didn't get out for 3 years. I was there. I now live very well indeed because my government honored the sacrifice I made of my youth and helped pay for me to get a graduate degree from one of the finest universities in this country. What does this have to do with John Edwards? In your response to Edwards' parting statements, which you took at face value, regarding his stated concern for the poor, Edwards apologized for his war vote, but in this parting statement, he failed to let his supporters know that there can be no help for the poor, no funding for social programs, no funding for infrastructure, as long as this perpetual state of belligerency in support of Pax Americana continues. So indeed, it appears that Edwards is no leader, but just another politician, who rather than selling hope, is selling charity. Apologies are cheap trade. Speaking the truth is much harder. Then he asked Clinton and Obama to buy into his charity work. Do you really think they will take that call seriously, facing McCain, who is already calling them war wusses? I forecast that tonight you will see both of them acting like Republicans in the debate, rushing to puff up their warlike credibility. And a little bit more, and then he signs it. Bill in San Francisco. So you think I was tricked by Edwards? Well, you're not the only one. Phone calls. Let's go back to the phone calls here. Alan is calling from Miami, listening to WINZ. Hey, Alan.
Hey, how you doing? And this is getting a little depressing at times, I have to admit.
What is?
Oh, I really feel we've been had, you know? We've been
Yeah.
We've been had real good. You and I, and probably everybody else in your program, knows that over half of the country wants this war to end.
Yes.
Over half this country wants Cheney to be impeached, and probably half now wants Bush to be impeached. And all of this stuff is out the window now, because before half the country even got to vote on anything, they've already winnowed out the people who don't fit the corporate model.
Yeah, isn't that slick, the way it's done?
And it's done, like, you know, and who made the decisions? The news companies. And if these two last standing in the Democratic Party had one iota of Democratic small-d spirit in them, they would have refused to participate in any debates in which the news companies forced the other people out. That exposes them for who they are.
Didn't the Republicans do that when, was it Fox News that said Ron Paul couldn't participate and the other Republicans said, if he's not in, we're not in? Am I...
I don't recall that particular one.
Am I not...
In the same way, we see that the Republicans have a way of stopping the speech that they don't want to hear. They got rid of Phil Donahue years ago. You saw what happened today. You were talking about talking about the war dead.
Montel Williams.
Montel Williams.
Yeah.
But isn't the Democratic Party doing the exact same thing? I mean, back in 2004 at the in Boston at the convention, they wouldn't allow anybody inside with peace pins. Michael Moore, who should have been given a medal and allowed to speak on the stage for having created Fahrenheit 9/11 to try and change the election, was forced to stand outside.
Yeah.
And now we have this year, when we know over half of the population wanted to end that war and went to, through the 2006 election. And the Congress did nothing. And 2 months ago, people were screaming about that. And now, from now until November, we're going to hear, is it experience or is it hope or whatever it is, change? I mean, give me a break. It's hard to believe how, and the thing is that people buy into it. They think, okay, these are the two legitimate choices. That's all the talk is about now, is one or the other. Right. One or the other. You're getting sleepy. It's Obama. It's Hillary. Don't you feel tired?
Look into my eyes.
Yeah. So I look around and I said, well, I mean, this is very serious because the country is under attack.
Yeah.
I mean, our very foundation, this country is under attack, and everybody's going around, la, 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 la. It's not happening.
I hear you.
It's not happening.
I hear you, Alan.
So,
all right.
Well, listen,
if you got more to say, I'll have to put you on hold. Oh, well, let me just move on. Alan, thank you. I got the point, and you said it well. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate it. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
But when he realized we don't support their attacks, they needed something to distract. Huh, anthrax. Let's further demonize his Afghanis. So Americans cheer while we kill the innocent families. And what better place to start a war? To build a pipeline to get the oil.
Justice and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. I hope, Alan, I hope you were finished talking. I got all confused here whether to put you on hold or end the call. If that was a little abrupt, I apologize. This is from Matt in New Bern, North Carolina, I believe. Mike, my wife and I scream out every time Obama is called black. It reminds me of the Nazis that considered anyone with one drop of Jewish blood was a Jew, ergo, take him away. Yeah, this is in reference to my comment the other night, and a couple of people identified themselves as African Americans wrote in and really took issue with me about this. And I wrote back to them and said, you missed the point of what I was trying to say entirely. It is the racist society that declares that if one parent is white and one parent is black, then the offspring is black. And that's because not because there's any inferiority, any inherent inferiority there, but because of the racist nature of the society, the way it's always been for 450 years. Come on. Some of you people need to give me a break. You don't listen close enough. George in Seattle writes, Mike, the problem with considering Barack Obama to be the last white man on the Democratic side of the presidential race is that the white side of Barack's family is the side that is related to Dick Cheney. What are the odds that the only black man who has ever had a real chance to be president of the United States would be related to Dick Cheney? Hopefully it is just some sick coincidence. George in Seattle. This comes from italics. I wrote this a while ago for someone else. I'm too tired to tailor it for you, but just wanted to pass it on. On being mixed race, some points to note. One, the previous generation had this wonderful naive idea that if we just have beautiful brown mixed race babies, the race problems would disappear. Without delivering a thesis on this matter, when did having children fix any relationship? I think the point's a little bit bigger than that. Number two, no one discusses Obama's whiteness because he's not white. This is not a choice he made, but a decision made for him. There will never be a day in his life, even if he becomes president, that he will either be a white man or be treated like one. Three, biracial is a term created by whites based on an Anglo concept of equality. Divide equally. Non-whites do not often have access to the same system of equality and tend to divide by necessity. Biracial implies that the white parent has an equal part in how the child is treated in society. This is not true. Even though mixed children of all backgrounds have a definite leg up in terms of race relations, they will never be white and are not afforded equal privileges and acceptance in white American society. although many of us have found a way to successfully and productively cohabitate with whites, we know, and everyone in the room knows, that we are not white. This is not necessarily a negative thing, just a reality. I just wonder if there will ever come a time, is there any possibility that Obama's presidency, if such a thing were to happen, would begin the process, not unlike the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, a whole different thing, but would Obama's presidency begin the a right of self-examination that might spread across this country, where people could finally take a look at this construct that we have that is just simply not valid anymore, this idea of who's black and who's white. I live in a not far from a place in Georgia called Clarkston, Georgia, that has been written up several times in the New York Times, because for some reason this small town, not far from where we live, has become a point of assimilation for refugees coming to this country, especially from African countries. And the Fugees, was that a TV show, the Fugees? Was it a documentary? It was about they wanted a soccer field over here, and the little village council refused to do it, and yada yada, it turned into a story. But the point I'm trying to make here is I see people along the road walking to and from the commuter train out here, the commuter buses out here, and they are black. There is no question that these people, their skin color is, some of them, coal black. And they are purely African. There is no question about the purity of their genetic makeup. To label somebody in this country like Barack Obama black is not only incorrect visually, it's a Caucasian or European American attempt to dictate by controlling language. And this is something that so many of us whites are just not aware of. When I was a kid growing up, when there was the beginnings of the idea of human rights in this country, equal rights, civil rights, I can remember people in my mother's generation. I don't remember my mother saying this. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. But I can remember people in my mother's generation saying things like, oh, I met this lady the other day on the bus. She's a black woman, but she's really nice. Or no, she's a Negro woman, but she's really nice. In other words, the qualifier there, she's a Negro, but she's really nice. And I can remember hearing that and realizing at the time, even at the time, whoa, wait a minute. And it was going into my little Caucasian head all the way back then. Well, I met this woman on the bus, who's Negro, colored. I met this woman on the bus. She's colored, but she's really nice. You know, that niceness somehow for this woman transcended her coloredness. So all this talk about race, maybe the generation that some of my kids are in will get past this. And is there any chance of people not referring to Barack Obama as an African American? Nobody calls me an Italian American or a Caucasian American. Man, people, lighten up. 7 past the hour. Kathy is feeling the pull of her high school years again tonight. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Spitfire writes in on Obama being, quote, black, end quote. The country at this point doesn't see Obama as black. They see him as a Muslim. Thanks to our informative media. Yeah. One other thing. This was published by ABC News today, and it was picked up by Common Dreams. So if you go to commondreams.org, it's there. Brian Ross is one of the authors here. And just a couple of sentences. In 6 years as a member of the Walmart Board of Directors between 1986 and 1992, Hillary Clinton remained silent as the world's largest retailer waged a major campaign against labor unions seeking to represent store workers. Clinton has been endorsed for president by more than a dozen unions, according to her campaign website, which omits any reference to her role at Walmart in its detailed biography of her. Walmart's anti-union efforts were headed by one of Clinton's fellow board members, John Tate, a Walmart executive vice president who also served on the board with Clinton for four of her 6 years. Tate was fond of repeating, as he did at a manager's meeting in 2004 after his retirement, what he said was his favorite phrase, quote, "Labor unions are nothing but blood-sucking parasites living off the productive labor of people who work for a living," end quote. An ABC News analysis of the videotapes of at least four stockholder meetings where Clinton appeared shows she never once rose to defend the role of American labor unions. And it goes on. Check it out, commondreams.org. Clinton remained silent as Walmart fought unions is the heading. So if that's the case, and I think most of us are aware that Hillary Clinton was on the board of directors of Walmart. I mean, my God, she was the wife of the governor. I'm sorry, but that's the way it works. She was the wife of the governor of Arkansas. That's where Walmart was located. In addition to being a corporate lawyer on her own, yada, yada, yada. But I would imagine that Sam Walton's company was more interested in having the wife of the governor than a female corporate attorney on their board. Right? This is America. It's the United States. So if, since it's common knowledge about Hillary Clinton's role as a board member of Walmart, and now it is clear, as I think it has been for some time, ABC is putting this out. I have no idea why ABC is putting it out. Maybe because they want to see Obama be the Democratic nominee, so it'll be easier for the Republican to win if they think. I don't know. Maybe not. I have no idea. I don't know anything anymore. Do you? I have followed the white rabbit down the hole. I have no idea what's real anymore. And no way. There are no constants. There is nothing, there is no page that you can flip to and read that gives you the rules about what is real and what is not real. And there's no page that I can flip to either. So I have no idea if Hillary Clinton was really a labor union mole on the board of Walmart. I have no idea. All I do know, and I have no idea why ABC is bringing this out. But what I do know is that I have questions about why American voters, especially conservatives, consistently, and matter of fact, liberals, because we always vote for the lesser of two evils, but conservatives consistently vote against their own best interests. Always. So if that's the case, and it is, why would union members endorse a candidate who sat on the board of Walmart while Walmart had another board member who was saying that labor unions are nothing but blood-sucking parasites? And while Walmart systematically as well as systemically destroyed even the idea of a unionized workforce. So, this is what cracks me up. So many of these slobbering lunatics on the right who want you to believe Hillary Clinton is a liberal or progressive. Jesus God! Oh, well. The tapes that ABC has show Clinton, according to the Brian Ross article, show Clinton in the role of a loyal company woman. She said at a June 1990 stockholders meeting, quote, "I'm always proud of Walmart and what we do and the way we do it better than anybody else," end quote. According to Brian Ross at ABC, Clinton would not agree to be interviewed on the subject, but now says she no longer shares Walmart's values and believes unions, in fact, quote, "have been essential to our nation's success," end quote. The videotapes do show that Clinton used her role to push for more environmentally friendly policies and better treatment of women. Critics say Clinton's efforts produced few tangible results, and Walmart is now defending itself in a lawsuit brought by 16 current and former female employees. Senator Clinton has recently sought to distance herself from Walmart. In a campaign speech last year in New Hampshire, Senator Clinton said, quote, "Now that I know that Walmart's policies do not reflect the best way of doing business and the values that I think are, or no, now I know that Walmart's policies do not reflect the best way of doing business and the values that I think are important in America," end quote. Oh, give me a break. God damn it. Stop it. Do I look like I'm 10 years old, Mrs. Clinton? Now you know, and you didn't know in 92 when you were on the board? Now you know that Walmart's policies don't reflect the best way of doing business? I hate the Clintons. I swear to God, I can't stand them. I don't hate them. I just can't stand this. Her Senate campaign returned a $5,000 contribution from a Walmart political action committee, although ABCNews.com discovered another $20,000 in contributions from Walmart executives and lobbyists. So she gave back the five, but what about the 20? Clinton's spokesperson, Howard Wolfson, said, quote, "There is no basis to return the money." Hillary Clinton did not try to change the company's minds about unions, Bill Clinton said. Bill Clinton said, quote, "We lived in a state that had a very weak labor movement where I always had the endorsement of the labor movement because I did what I could do to make it stronger." She knew there was no way she could change that, not with it headquartered in Arkansas, and she agreed to serve. End quote. In a written statement, Wolfson, the Clinton spokesperson, said, quote, "As president, she will fight alongside labor to promote the economic growth of America's middle class," end quote. He said Clinton now strongly believes Walmart workers should be able to unionize and bargain collectively. Yeah, that was then, this is now. 1992, as George Bush likes to say, is so long ago, it almost doesn't even exist, right? That was, my God, 16 years ago, wasn't it? So it doesn't count. 16 years ago, Hillary Clinton was only, what, 40? 38, 39? Just a young sprout, right? And now she understands why labor unions are important.
Gives chasing.
Tend to forget. I mean, ours is a society where things are like instant, so therefore history almost is like so far back it doesn't count.
Yeah, like, you know. Reg writes, let's be fair, Bob Ortega, author of In Sam We Trust, A History of Walmart, said Clinton used her position on the board to urge the company to improve its gender and racial diversity. Because of Clinton's prodding, Walton agreed to hire an outside firm to track the company's progress in hiring women and minorities, Ortega said. He went on to say, quote, there were things the company was not addressing and wouldn't have had she not pushed them to do so. She's somebody who could definitely get things done, end quote. In fact, Clinton proved to be such a thorn in Walton's side that at Walmart's annual meeting in 1987, when shareholders challenged Walton on the company's lack of female managers, he assured them the record was improving, quote, now that we have a strong-willed young lady on the board, end quote. Clinton was particularly vocal on environmental matters, pressing the company to boost its sale and use of recycled materials and other so-called green products. Gary Morrow, who served with Clinton on a Walmart Environmental Advisory Committee, pointed to many successes, such as persuading the company to establish recycling centers and sell products like recycled oil and long-life light bulbs. Morrow said, quote, Hillary had real impact. When she had an idea, things got moving. When she resigned from the committee, it stopped having any innovative ideas and stopped being effective, end quote. Well, okay, but if she was able to get the company to use recycled oil in long-life light bulbs or to sell them, that's a wonderful thing, but at the same time, she sat silently on a board of directors where one of her cohorts said labor unions are nothing but blood-sucking parasites living off the productive labor of people who work for a living. I'm sorry, Reg, on this one I'm going to disagree with you. I'm sure she did everything Mr. Ortega and Mr. Morrow said, but they do not say that Hillary Clinton stood up for any attempt ever while she was on that board in terms of organized labor. Green issues are very important. Organized labor, union membership, is critical to the middle class, to the working class, to the whatever. I cannot tolerate a Hillary Clinton candidacy. I just can't. All right, back to your phone. Not that anybody gives a damn. Back to your phone calls. Edie is calling from Dogpatch, Alabama. Hey, Edie.
Oh, hi. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I don't sound quite right tonight. I'm on Darvastatin and antibiotics.
Sounds like fun.
I guess. But so I have to do this for a week so I can go and get my tooth yanked.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my daughter and my sister managed to scrounge up the $40 to get it yanked. Because we're unfortunate enough to live in this country, I can't afford to get the root canal that would save it.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. But I called him in the beginning about Edwards and how he was invoked at the debate by both Clinton and Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And how, now that he's out of the way, what an angel of mercy he and his wife have always been. And for the working people, and now, without actually saying it, he's made us, you know, at least provide lip service to those causes.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, yeah, you're right. Absolutely,
yeah.
Right.
And I don't know. I know that my daughter and my sister and I were going to vote for Edwards on Super Tuesday. My daughter still lives in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and kind of almost your neighbor. She still lives in the 4th District. And and this time we'll be voting for Obama. And I can do that without holding both nostrils. So that's what I'm going to do.
Well, good for you, Edie.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Take care. All right. And good luck with the Darvastatin and the antibiotics. Just good luck. Been there. Ray is calling from Oakdale, Michigan, listening on KTNF. Is that right?
Yes.
this Mike?
Yeah, where's Oakdale, Michigan?
No, Oakdale, Minnesota,
oh,
Michael.
Oh, Minnesota.
Yeah, you remember me. I'm Kapuli Ray.
Oh, yeah, the crazy guy.
The crazy guy, exactly.
How you doing? How you doing, Ray?
Well, it's just so wonderful that you're back on the air, and
it is indeed.
And, your wisdom would be more than a little appreciated right now, Michael, because I am swinging wildly between two extremes, one of which is to run against our local representative in Congress because she's a little wimpy Democrat, and I used to respect her, but she and I had words several months ago because I took her on. I accused her of being part of the Nancy Pelosi school of how to get through life. The Democrats are finished. They're morally and intellectually bankrupt. But the other extreme is leaving the United States, moving to Iceland or Spain or any country that will. In fact, if anybody's listening to your program from there, I'd sure like to hear from them.
Well, I've only heard good things about Iceland. Hold on, Crazy Ray. We'll be back in a second. I got to do a break, so just stay right there, and we'll come back and talk with Ray in Oakdale, Minnesota. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Strange faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange. When you're strange. When you're strange.
Right Wing Radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We were talking with, who are we talking with? Ray in Oakdale, Minnesota. All right, Ray,
thanks
for holding on.
Thank you for letting me talk here,
sure,
Michael.
Sure, sure, sure.
But, you know, I haven't given up. A couple years ago, it's been at least 2 years since we've talked, I think.
Yeah, well, what you brought up before the break, I say run for office.
You do?
Oh, sure. Don't leave, not yet. Run for office.
Well, I'm thinking about running as an independent radical, and I make no apologies for my choice of words. I think it's imperative that we take back the language. We must not allow the right to, you know, to tell
right,
us what
right.
we can say and how we can say it.
Why don't you run as one of the what is it, Minnesota, the farm labor?
Oh, please, the DFL.
Yeah, DFL.
Yeah,
no?
they've long sold out.
Oh, really?
Finished. Yeah, they're like the rest of the Democrat Party. I mean, they have no principles they've ever seen that they liked.
Well, I didn't realize that. Well, then run as an independent radical. There you go.
That's what I'm going to do.
The IR ticket.
There you go. If I do it, but Michael, before you let me go, can I once again give you our website? It was down for a while. We've got it back up.
Sure.
And I also wanted to give you, if I can get away with it, my personal email, because I want to hear from people out there who are as hungry for revolutionary change as I am. So I'm going to give you the website first.
Okay.
It's www.kalpulli, KALPULLI.net.
All right. I remember you telling us about that.
I figured you were, and because of you, we got some great hits at the time, but, you know, things
changed.
Things went wrong, and I won't go into details.
All right. You sure you want to give out your email address?
Yes, I do.
I advise against that, but if you want to.
I'm going to.
Go ahead.
Only because I'm in a hurry to get some lectures going.
All right. Let her rip. Okay, what is it?
rtricomo, TRICOMO, @yahoo.com.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're safe. If you're using Yahoo email, you're safe. Yeah, rtricomo@yahoo.com.
Yeah, T-R-I-C-O-M-O.
Okay, very quickly, what do you want people to write to you about, Ray?
Well, I'm interested in taking the case for an indigenous-centered society, an ecologically-centered society on the road. I think we've got to get way past protesting. We all hate Dick Cheney, but what happens after Dick Cheney? What happens when we get rid of these so-and-sos once and for all, including Hillary and Barack?
All right.
I don't like any of them.
I hear you. All right.
Except Cynthia McKinney.
I got that loud and clear.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Ray. Let me know if you get hits on your site or emails to rtricomo@yahoo.com, and let me know how that works out. All right. Thanks, Ray. Appreciate you checking in. Lance is calling from Fort Worth, Texas. Lance, welcome to the program.
Yes, two things. One about the head of Quest. He was approached by the Cheney-Bush junta
right.
to carry out illegal spying as early February of 2001.
Wow.
So the next time you hear these Republitards saying, well, we need to do this to prevent another September 11th, they were illegally spying before the first September 11th.
Oh, my
and
God.
And didn't do a damn thing to stop it. So... That dog won't hunt, as they say in these parts.
I hear you.
And here's the other thing. I just, a couple weeks ago, got back from a funeral of my grandfather. He was in the 1st Marines, and he fought against the Japanese in the Pacific. And from the time I was a little kid, he'd always tell me about how brutal and vicious the Japanese were, because when they got American prisoners, they would force water down their lungs.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, what Numbnuts has ordered done to prisoners today, because they call it waterboarding, making it sound like they're going surfing, but it's torture.
Right.
The part that really gets me is that now Hillary is trying to explain why she tried to monkey around with the Military Commissions Act and tried to soft-pedal the torture that was in there until even some of the Republicans balked at going along with it.
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, she was holding out until she got a briefing from officials at the Pentagon that told her, in fact, that, yes, waterboarding is torture. And I'm thinking, excuse me, I don't need to be told by briefed by the Pentagon to tell me that something that's vile, something that the Imperial Japanese Army used to do, is torture. I know that. I knew that since I was a six-year-old kid.
Not only that, but it was used during the Spanish Inquisition.
It was used by the Gestapo and the Abwehr and the SS right. against the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto to try to extract information.
Hillary just found out after talking to someone at the Pentagon that it is torture.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, no, don't give me that. When somebody lies to me like that, I take it personally. It's like someone's coming up to me and saying, you know something, I think you're really stupid, or I think you're just so gutless and pathetic that you're not going to do anything about it when I lie to your face. It makes me sick.
I hear you. Lance, let me ask you something. Are you listening? How are you listening to the program tonight? You know we're on a station in Dallas-Fort Worth now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm at the opposite end of Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm about 60 miles from your station.
Oh, okay.
But I do listen to you on Sirius, and right now I've got you on the computer.
Oh, okay.
But I like Sirius better anyway. Nothing against the station. It's just a little too far away.
Yeah, well, if you're too far away, sure. Yeah. Okay, I'm just curious. All right, well, good points, Lance. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
Okay, thanks. I'll be back.
All right, sir. All right. Hope to hear from you again. Take care. I just really want to get this in about the State of the Union came with a signing statement. David Swanson at afterdowningstreet.org. Had this up a couple of days ago, and a couple of you have sent it to me. On the day of the State of the Union, apparently hoping nobody would notice, Bush posted a statement on the White House website announcing his intention to violate major sections of the Defense Authorization Bill that he just signed into law. And as Swanson writes, for their part, the Democrats in Congress have chosen not to push for a just and decent economic stimulus plan because they want to work amicably with Bush. They have chosen not to vote on contempt citations for Harriet Myers or Josh Bolton in order to work more amicably on the economic stimulus package. They've scratched impeachment out of the Constitution, and Dennis Kucinich even backed down on his plans to introduce articles of impeachment on Monday. And, of course, Congress is committed to throwing every possible dime down the black hole of the Iraq occupation. What has been the president's response to all this bipartisan cooperation? Well, he decided to close the office that handles the Freedom of Information request from Congress. He's left Blackwater free, but jailed citizens who reenact its crimes. He's rewritten government reports on global warming. He's blocked his Justice Department investigation of political hirings and firings while the former governor of Alabama begins his 8th month as a political prisoner. He's delivered a State of the Union address packed with the same contemptuous lies as last year and announced the seizure of new powers, which Congress greeted with applause. And then there's the latest signing statement. The statement announces in the by now familiar coded language of the unitary executive, Bush's intention to violate 4 key sections of a bill he simultaneously is making law. Congressional Quarterly sums up these sections as follows. One provision sets up a commission to probe contracting fraud in Iraq and Afghanistan. Another expands protection for whistleblowers who work for government contractors. A third requires that U.S. intelligence agencies promptly respond to congressional requests for documents. And a fourth bars funding for permanent bases in Iraq and for any action that exercises U.S. control over Iraq's oil money. Now, that's what Congress passed, Truth Seekers, in the Defense Authorization Bill. And Bush issued signing statements. Did you get that? Bush gives himself the right not to probe contracting fraud. And as Swanson says, is it his money? Is it his blood? Oh, the rat bastard. Oh, the Bush rat bastard. I don't know what else to say. He's just a slimy rat bastard. He is just a slimy rat bastard. And you and I know this, and David Swanson knows it, and the U.S. House knows about it, and the Democratic Party leadership knows about it. Have you heard anything? Have you heard anything? There were two, let me see here. The Guardian of London wrote about it, about the signing statements on the defense authorization bill. The Boston Globe wrote a report about it. The Associated Press wrote an article that touched on the topic but missed the point. The Virginia Pilot newspaper wrote an article that followed Senator Jim Webb's lead and avoided the central problem. Senators Casey, Levin, and Webb made remarks that failed to challenge Bush's abuse of power or mention the word impeachment. The House of Representatives remained a total and absolute silence. And activist groups followed suit, and they all look like fools and hypocrites. It's just incredible. It's just incredible, isn't it? George W. Bush, the great defender of Afghan and Iraq and Palestinian democracy, right? But I can see the fire still alight, burning into the night. There's too many men, too many people, making too many problems. And not much love to go around. Can't see it in the land of confusion. This is the world we... Thanks to the crew. Program tonight, as always, engineered by Ian Huff. And it is Ian who answers your phone calls at KPHX in Phoenix. Our technical director is Billy Foster. Our podcast manager is Ben Birch. Our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota. Our resident philosopher is Bob Alexander. And our executive producer is Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls with the little bit of time we have left here. Lloyd is calling from Massachusetts, listening on the Internet. Hey, Lloyd.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, I thought you were signing off.
No, we're signing on to hear what you got to say.
Oh, there you go. I called you a few months ago. I was the banker who told you we're going into a depression.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, and, gee, I hate to see how right I was. But I'm calling you.
What other predictions do you have? The Fed, as certainly you know, cut the rates again. What is this, an historic burst? The first time it's been cut this much in a week? What is it, 1.75 points?
I don't even think they're finished yet.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, a couple of guys around me at work have mortgages, and, you know, they can't wait to see it go down more. And I tell them, well, you know, it might be good for your individual mortgage, but it's not going to, you know, change the price of oil, which is now we're being told, you know, it's going to go up to $4 this summer or spring or next month.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other things that go along with that. Nothing is being fixed, and I keep telling them every time the price of every time they cut the rate, it actually makes everything worse. It makes our debt worse. It makes our bonds, the interest on our bonds more expensive.
Doesn't it also drop the value of the dollar right now?
And exactly right. It makes the dollar even more worthless, and Canadian coins worth much, much more. So,
well, their money is much prettier than ours anyway.
things have not changed. I mean, there is no change. I've tried calling Schumer's office. I tried calling Max Baucus's office. I've tried calling a few others, and as usual, as I'm sure you can guess, I was hung up on.
Mm-hmm.
Not only by their regular offices when you call an office, but by the finance committee, the ones who do the research. And I try to get a hold of a couple of them, and they don't want to really listen to anybody who even has 25 years of experience like I do. They don't want to hear it.
Why?
They do not want input. Well, because as I was told, you're going to love this. They have the best mind there.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
That's what I was told. And I go, really? I go, we have a couple of pretty good minds where I work, and we actually do a better job than you do. We actually have to clean up what you guys are creating, which is now, I mean, just from a few months from when I called you before, the amount of foreclosures is much, much worse than when I called you just a few months ago. And
what do you see as the peak period for the foreclosures? I have a friend in the mortgage business here in Atlanta. Actually, it's reverse mortgages.
Yeah, you had mentioned that before.
Yeah, and he says 2008 is when it's this year, towards the middle or the end of this year is when it's going to peak. Do you agree with that?
Well, and I think I might have mentioned this the last time, because people aren't getting the full story. I think you guys are basically just talking about the subprime, and that may be true in subprime in that it may peak late in 2008. I don't think it is going to peak in 2008. I don't think it's going to peak until 2009, because that's when they started doing that product a few years ago. And so the back end of that really isn't until 2009.
A lot of those were five-year adjustable rate mortgages that were taken up in 04, yeah.
Exactly. So we may not see, you know, that whole cycle pan out until 2009, 2010. That's what I think, but as I mentioned once before, that's just part of the problem, and actually a small part of the problem. It is not the bigger picture, which is causing our economy to tank. Actually, they continue to try to make us focus on the subprime thing, and it is such a minor issue compared to what I work on, which are the business loans. Mm-hmm. Which are the regular loans. These are not subprime, regular loans that are tanking all over the country. These are regular loans, regular underwriting, which means, you know, their cash flows. When they're written, they can afford them. And now they cannot afford them because cash flows are down, the oil prices are up.
Is the Times business section reporting on this? Is Wall Street Journal reporting on this?
Yeah. No, not exactly.
I don't get the journal. I don't get the journal, but I get the New York Times, and I have found some of the most interesting reading now is a New York Times business section, and I have not read about what you're talking about. I bet I soon will, right?
I hope you will, and I did talk to one of the writers there once. And I left him a message just last week. He did not call me back. You know, egos are, you know, if they didn't write it, they don't, you know.
They don't want to talk about it. Yeah. Hey, Lloyd,
yeah.
Lloyd, I'm looking at the clock. We are flat out of time.
Please
don't let so much time go by. You have very interesting things to say, and I think a lot of the listeners would like to hear it because you're talking our language, pal. Thanks, Lloyd. I appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow night, okay? We hope to have some interesting sound for you tomorrow night, too. Trust me on that one. Take care tonight, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.